This is Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, macOS, and mobile web development. Sometimes coffee. It's hosted by Marco Arment and me, Dan Benjamin. Today is February 16th, 2012. It's episode number 64. We'd like to say thanks very, very much to our two sponsors today. They rhyme. Rackspace, Squarespace. We also want to mention that the bandwidth for this episode was provided by MacMiniColo.net, the best place to host your Mac Mini. Go to MacMiniColo.net/5x5 and they've got special deals just for you. Now we're recording.
Oh, okay. It feels different.
Doesn't? There's a different,
it's like,
you know.
It's like on your birthday and so how does it feel to be X?
Right.
And it's like, it feels just like it did a few hours ago when I was X minus one.
Well, plus we have all the smoke machines running and the special lighting.
Of course, yeah.
They call it hair lighting.
So,
no news, nothing big today, nothing happened today.
I think the biggest news is probably that Ivy Bridge was delayed to June.
That's right,
that?
Yeah.
That kind of sucks, actually.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, Intel sent out a thing to their partners or something, I think this morning or last night, basically saying that the Ivy Bridge CPU family is being delayed until they're going to start shipping some of them in April, and then they're going to ship them probably in volume in June, which is a delay of a few months. Now, this is pretty important. So, you know, Ivy Bridge is, I think it's mostly a die shrink of Sandy Bridge. I don't think they're really adding much to the cores. But what this means is that the Sandy Bridge quad core, especially the big CPUs that are in the 15-inch laptops and that make them so hot and make them have such relatively mediocre battery life, is the Ivy Bridge die shrink will make them run a heck of a lot cooler. It'd basically enable something in the MacBook Air size class to have a quad core CPU, use much less power, produce much less heat. And so for that to be delayed is a pretty big deal. And what that might mean, everyone's been assuming that whatever the next MacBook Pro was, you know, whether it adopts the MacBook Air shape or not, like whether we have like a 15-inch MacBook Air, it would probably require this Ivy Bridge CPU to fit inside of that setup, so it doesn't have to have a giant fan and a giant heat sink and everything else, because, you know, you can't fit a whole bunch of stuff in something the size of the Air. So what this really means is either that the introductory relatively low volume of Ivy Bridges that come out in April are going almost all to Apple, and Intel just doesn't want to say that to their other partners, or even Apple's going to get hit by this, and we're not going to see the next MacBook Pro till June. And either one of those kind of sucks. Yeah, I think the latter is more likely. I think it's more likely that Apple will wait until they can get them in volume, because pretty much everything Apple sells now is a high volume product.
Would they though? I mean, if they could get any reasonable number of these, I'm not saying 1,000 of them, but if they could get thousands of them, why not have them and sell out of them and make them and say, look, we're making them as fast as we can get them, and that might mean we can only make a few hundred a week, and we know we won't meet demand, but we've got them and we're putting them out the door.
It really just depends on whether they can get a realistic enough amount of these CPUs to even do that. Like, if Apple's going to release, say, a 15-inch MacBook Air, it's not going to be their most popular product by any means, but it's going to sell a lot, and they're going to need a lot to address that demand. And so, you know, it's possible that Intel is telling their other partners not to expect anything until June because they're giving them all to Apple before then. Apple has done similar things like that with the Xeons and the Mac Pros, where you can pretty much only get these CPUs from Apple for the first few weeks or months that they're available because they take all the inventory. That has happened before, although not recently. Now, you know, so with this, maybe they're doing that. I doubt it. I think it's much more likely that Intel is trying to clear out its inventory of Sandy Bridge, which is what other outlets have suggested.
Yeah.
And who knows? So what else? I guess we also have some minor follow-up. Two episodes ago, we were talking about the two different standards for 56K modems when they first came out, before V92, I think, or V90 unified them. And I remembered X2. I couldn't remember the other one. Thanks to Casey Liss, I now know that it was K56 Flex. Remember that?
Vaguely.
No, hardly anybody bought K56 Flex modems, which is why I don't think it really matters.
Think about the names of stuff they used to have back then. I mean, today everything has to have a buzzword, and back then it'd be like K52 Flex. I mean, that was like a perfectly valid name, and you as a consumer, it was your responsibility to know exactly what that meant and know which thing you were buying. The confusion that surrounded purchasing anything related to computers back in those days was just, it's baffling. You had to be an expert to really know what you were getting, and very few people were experts. And the people that worked in the stores typically knew nothing. Or they knew so much that they didn't know where to begin.
You know what's also really cool? Having seltzer on tap in my house.
How do you like it?
It's pretty cool, I gotta say. I was a little on the fence. Have you gotten yours yet?
No, it's supposed to deliver sometime between today and, I don't know.
What happened? You don't have Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
Or no, this was a third party, right?
Yeah, it was third party, and I got
mine 2 days ago.
Well, I think they're probably East Coast company, wherever they ship from.
Man.
And I'm out here in the wild
west. Out there in the cowboy hats.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I wasn't sure how it would go, but I do like it. I mean, the actual thing itself is, it's pretty cheap piece of plastic.
Right.
Not sure how much that matters. The only downside is that I seem to only be able to, because of the structure of it and everything, you can only really carbonate about a liter at a time. You can't really do less than that.
Mm.
So if you just want like one glass of seltzer or like enough to make one egg cream, you have to make a whole bottle. And it's not that big. You know, it's about 1 liter, maybe a little bit less even. But, you know, that's my one complaint, is that I feel like I'm wasting. Because what happens is I make the one bottle and it comes with a cap. You can close it and put it in the fridge. But, you know, once you do that, the next day, it's like a half-open bottle of seltzer. You know, if you ever bought a regular bottle, you know, the next day, that's not that fizzy anymore. Like the little half bit that's left. So normally when I buy canned seltzer, or when I buy seltzer in the store, I buy it in cans, not bottles, for that reason. So I never have like a half-finished bottle. So that's my one complaint, is that I can't seem to do a small amount of seltzer, but I'll just have to drink more of it. Just have to drink a whole liter at once.
Right. And I mean, at least you know what you're getting, you know where it came from, and you know exactly your cost. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to getting it and trying it out.
I'm also curious to know, you know, roughly in practical use, how long the CO2 cartridge will last, especially if I'm carbonating to like a Merlin level of carbonation. And you can really get a lot of carbonation in there if you push it. You can have very heavily carbonated seltzer. You might even be able to hear it bubbling on my desk. It's pretty crazy.
Different level of carbonation.
You can get it so carbonated that it's doing it's like little flecks of water are flying out the top like 10 minutes after you pour the glass. It's pretty nuts. So far I like it. So what else happened? I don't know. It's been a pretty slow week, right?
Until this morning.
Right.
Couple things happened.
I just woke up. So did anything happen?
Well, I'm sure that you have had a chance to read, if nothing else, you've read Daring Fireball this morning, as many of our listeners probably have. And by the way, I want to mention that in all of the links and things that we talk about, whether it's the SodaStream that Marco and I bought or all of these links, they'll be in the show notes. You can go to 5by5.tv/buildanalyze/64 and you will see all of the links there. And we want to say thanks very much to the lovely ladies at helpspot.com. They make the best help desk software anywhere. So,
hold on a sec. Before we continue.
Sure.
Are we now to the point where more of your hosts have soda streams than not?
Everyone, I think, except John Siracusa. And I don't know. See, I don't think that Horace Dedu, the host of Critical Path, I don't think he needs one, because in the nation where he lives, they have a tap built in that just, they have seltzer water, they have wine, they have orange juice. It all just comes right out of the taps.
And graphs.
Yes. So except for those two, I think everybody else does. Yeah. And maybe that should be a requirement. if I like this thing as much as everybody says I will, maybe that when you start hosting a show, you either need to have one or we have to work out a way that you get one. Maybe that's like the welcome kit
package. Yeah. You send them the big Rode Podcaster, the tremendous arm that it comes on.
Right.
And then you send them a SodaStream.
Maybe that's it. That's the welcome kit. Welcome to 5x5. Here's your carbonation system. Well, what came out this morning, the big news that happened today is Mountain Lion, which is the new version of what's apparently just being called OS 10 as opposed to Mac OS 10. They've dropped the Mac from it kind of officially, it seems, once and for all, maybe.
Yeah, and I think it was Jim Dalrymple or somebody confirmed that with an Apple rep that yes, indeed, they're no longer using the word Mac in the title.
That's very interesting. And Jim had, we'll put him in the show notes. He's got a great first look at it. There's a handful of great sort of the, you know, what's great about Jim is that he writes very in depth. He doesn't waste a lot of time with like tons and tons, like making videos and things. It just, this is his takeaway. So if you just want a straightforward takeaway, I recommend his, and that'll be in the show notes. He's great at this. The Verge has more of a hands-on, as does Engadget. And then there's the interesting, it's not really a write-up as much as it's a unique story from our friend John Gruber at Daring Fireball. He was summoned a week ago to, was it New York where they were?
Yeah.
So he was summoned to New York and told privately. Just him and Schiller and then
two other guys from Apple
just sitting around.
They basically gave him a keynote
just for him,
privately, just for him. And apparently, they did this with all the people individually,
yeah,
with all the selected journalists that they talked to. I mean, it's really cool and it's really bizarre.
Yeah, what's weird is he would have thought they would have brought the journalists together in a room and said, "We're doing this with, you know, we've got 10 people out here. So all 10 of you come on in the room. We'll give you," but that's not how they did it at all. It was a one-on-one thing. That's the interesting part to me.
Yeah. And I mean, this really, when I woke up this morning, I was lying in bed trying to motivate myself to get out of bed. So naturally, I grabbed my iPad and started reading things on the internet. And because that always works, right?
Right.
And I'm going through Twitter and I see some random tweet about how Growl just got Sherlocked. And with a link to apple.com/mountainlion. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
Right.
And I click on it, and I see this whole page about something called Mountain Lion with all these feature lists and screenshots. And I'm like, is this a joke? Like, I kept looking at the address bar to make sure it was apple.com. Like, this,
right.
Really? This came out of nowhere, and Lion just happened.
Yeah.
Because keep in mind, Lion did not come out at WWDC. Lion came out, like, in October, right?
Yeah.
What was the official launch? It wasn't that long ago.
It really, and this is, they've announced,
well,
one thing.
September, maybe, but yeah.
They're on a yearly schedule for OS X updates. They're on a yearly schedule.
Previously, they were really on like an 18-month to 2-year schedule.
Right.
And so this is very aggressive, and I think it's great. I think a lot of people were afraid that they were neglecting the Mac, that they were focusing only on iOS, and the Mac was kind of this, you know, mostly ignored side product line. But that's, I think it's pretty clear that that's not the case now. And I got to say, too, what I saw so far, Mountain Lion, I haven't installed, I haven't had any time yet. I've been very busy, so I haven't had any time yet this morning to install it. But what I saw was a whole bunch of stuff that all the features they listed on the site, I'm like, oh, that's great. That makes total sense. Like, I'm really glad they're doing that. I still do worry. You know, we talked in our special, which you should promote heavily. People loved it, by the way. All the feedback has been awesome.
Oh, yeah. And we last week, Marco and Merlin Mann joined me for a special episode, which we did sort of because, well, John Syracuse couldn't do a hypercritical last week. And, you know, he might not be able to do it this week. I haven't actually got confirmation. So if not, who knows what could happen?
If you want to do episode two.
Who knows what could happen? It. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So we called it kind of critical and we released it in the specials feed and I'll put a link there to it. But it was great. Thank you again, Marco, for doing that. It was so much fun. Everybody seems to have loved it. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes too. But anyway, please continue.
Right. So in that, I mentioned, and we talked a little bit about my fear that Apple's software quality was going down over time as they tried to do so much. They are on such an aggressive schedule for iOS and I guess now also for OS X on the Mac. Which see now because iOS is OS X. This is vague.
Yeah,
we'll have to figure out how to say that, like iPods Touch. Anyway, It's going to be hard for them, I think, to maintain quality as they're on this aggressive of schedule. We've already seen, I would say, Lion when it came out was one of the buggier releases. Like all of the 10.x.0s have been kind of rough, but I think Lion was really pretty rough. And I still have 10.7.2 because so I don't want to reboot, but. I don't know if 10.7.3 really fixes this significantly, but even in 10.7.2, I have a lot of problems. As I mentioned before, Preview, one of the simplest apps on the system, has become one of my least reliable apps because it never resumes from being suspended properly. And just like simple things like that, Xcode, same problem. A lot of weird graphical glitches. The way it manages the two GPUs in the 15 inches is really terrible for battery life. There's so many little things that are wrong with Lion, and a few big things like Preview sucking, that you know I really worry. And similarly, iOS 4 and 5 have been pretty buggy as well. And you know, bugs do get ironed out over time, but they also add new ones. and it does feel like their quality has been very strained recently. And so with this move to a more aggressive schedule for OS X on the Mac, is that how we're... Maybe that's how we can say it, just OS X on the Mac.
OS X on the Mac, sure.
Yeah, that's awkward. Although actually it is more clear. For them to move to such an aggressive schedule for that, I really fear the ramifications it's going to have on the quality. Now, I assume they've also been staffing up like crazy over the last 5 years as they've grown so immensely quickly. They've probably been staffing up, and as Merlin pointed out, maybe that's the problem. Maybe they were staffing up, and the time required to get people up to speed and get them integrated into the teams and work out those issues with a growing team, maybe that overhead has exacerbated this problem somewhat recently. But maybe that's also going to go away soon as the company gets used to being a bigger company and as people get settled in and they find more good people. So that's...
But here's what it sounds like you're saying. It sounds like you're saying, I would really love for them to be fixing all of these things that at least for a handful of users, maybe a significant number of users, can be identified as problems. Please fix those before kind of busting out of the gates and saying, here's something brand new. And every single review that I've read of this, all the reporting that I've read on it, makes very clear this is not a snow leopard to leopard. This is not a small update. This is a big one. This is another big update with lots of new things, lots of changes, new apps, tons of stuff.
Well, but it might still be that. So, you know, when they went from leopard to snow leopard, they made a big deal out of saying there's pretty much no new features for the user. It's basically it's like an improvement release. It's a lot of under the hood changes, a lot of speed improvements, and you know, other just general like under the hood improvements. What this might be is a lot of those under the hood improvements to Lion, because what they've launched or what they've said it's going to contain so far, it's mostly things that at the built-in applications level. It's like improvements to Mail and iCal, which we'll get to in a second, and iMessage and all these things. Like it's improvements to the Apple stock apps that come with the OS, but they aren't really talking about much of the underlying stuff yet. And I haven't, maybe they haven't. I just didn't see it because they didn't put that in the promo. I don't know, but it does seem like maybe this is them saying this is, you know, them subtly saying this is a very big bug fix update for Lion that will also happen to contain these other user-facing features to get people to upgrade. Maybe that's it. Because Lion has so many of these things kind of half implemented. Like iCloud support in Lion is kind of half done. You know, you have the contacts and the calendars, but you don't have things like the notes, the reminders, and the files. Do any apps synchronize files between the desktop? I guess some of the third-party stuff does, like some of the good high-end stuff does.
Right, but you mean Apple specifically.
But like iWork still has no concept of iCloud on the desktop, which is bizarre. iWork is like weirdly, I think now this is our answer actually. iWork has been weirdly lacking an update on the desktop for a long time, but maybe this explains, maybe they're just going to wait until Mountain Lion is out and just say, all right, iWork now uses the stock file open and file save dialogs that have iCloud support, and that's it. That's all they need to do. So maybe that actually makes more sense than having them bolt on something custom before then.
Yeah.
Anyway, one thing I noticed also about this. So first, we should talk about the app signing security setting. This is actually a bit of follow up from probably a year ago when we last talked about this. Not that long, but around the time Lion came out, we had discussed how they had the Mac App Store, and Lion was the first release to come out after the Mac App Store. And so we said, why don't they have a setting in the system that by default, it will only run App Store apps. And anyone who's a nerd and wants to go download anything else can go and uncheck a box somewhere in settings and say run anything. But like, why didn't they do that for Lion? And now they did that for Mountain Lion. They actually have a third setting, which is more useful. So they have App Store only, they have run anything, and then they have a middle setting, which is the default, I believe, right? Which is run anything in the Mac App Store or anything that has been signed by a developer certificate from Apple. And that means that, you know, it means that you can make an app that goes under no review whatsoever. Apple does not review signed apps. It's just a setting in Xcode. You get a certificate from Apple, and you have Xcode sign it when you build it. And you know, it's been around forever. I think Windows has had this for forever as well. It's been around forever, but the OS didn't really do anything with those certificates, as far as I know. But now they have a way to only run signed apps, and also to revoke those certificates remotely. So if an app is discovered to be malware, as Gruber wrote in his piece, they can just turn off that certificate, and that's it.
Done.
And it's like a kill switch for almost all Mac users, because almost no one's going to change that default. And in a way, that's actually a really smart default, because if they did it the way we suggested 4 months ago, which was to make App Store only the default, there's still a lot of apps out there that wouldn't be able to run. And so most people would go and change that setting pretty quickly. With this default, I think there's going to be a lot fewer people who are going to really need to change that. So they're going to keep their system in a more secure state most of the time. That, I think, is very valuable. Now, I don't know anything about Windows anymore. Does Microsoft have any requirements like that you can set, and are they ever set? Because they do have signing. I know that. I don't know. Please don't email us, but you can email Dan and tell him.
Yeah, if anyone in the chat room knows, speak up and we'll echo it back out here. But I'm not sure about that. It definitely works in. It's a really neat concept. The idea of a kill switch, the idea of having something that, you know, a trusted resource in Apple that they can stop something terrible from happening to a whole bunch of people with relative ease now. It gives them a certain degree of control that I think a lot of people might reject. They might be uncomfortable with it. They might say, I don't want Apple to have that control, especially app developers. I don't want Apple to be able to do that. What if they get it wrong? What if there's a misunderstanding? They're going to cut me off. And that's what developers would be worried about. Are you worried about something like that?
Because
they could do that, right?
They could, yeah. I'm not that worried about it. I mean, they have had something like this ever since that, what was that Trojan that came out? Mac Defender, was it? Yeah, that. ever since then, they had some kind of like master kill switch thing in the OS that they could update remotely somehow, I think. But it was really, it was probably a pretty rudimentary system that was probably pretty difficult to work in practice. I don't know. I'm not that worried about them like cutting me off randomly. I don't think that's what they intend. I think what this says by even having this setting, this says that they recognize that people on the Mac have different goals than an iOS, and that on the Mac you have a lot of very good use cases to run either unsigned or at least non-App Store apps. On iOS, you don't have that as much. Most people in their use, even power users in their usage of iOS, don't often run into limits that the App Store restrictions are imposing.
Mm-hmm.
But on the Mac, that's a very, very common thing. And maybe someday they'll say everything has to be App Store only. But I think what this release shows is that day is still a while off.
And that's really a good thing, because a lot of developers, for whatever reason, can't be or don't want to be in the App Store. And yet they want something that makes their apps seem on par with the apps that are featured there.
Exactly. You know, I think, you know, what this shows is that they're not going to like force us down everyone's throats suddenly one day. Like, maybe they'll try to make as many apps as possible work in the App Store with various, you know, new sandboxing allowances and things like that. But this does show that Apple respects how people use OS X on the Mac and what their needs are, and how they can't do App Store only yet and possibly for a very long time. And so they're not going to just surprise us one day and say, all right, from this point forward, it's App Store only, period. You know, unless you crack something. You know, I don't think it's a very big risk anymore that they're going to do that. One thing I love also about this, I love that they're dropping the name iCal.
Right, calendar.
Yeah, now it's just calendar.
No more iChat, just messages. And you know what?
Well, hold on. Is it called iMessage or is it messages?
I thought it was messages.
I don't know, I haven't installed the beta yet.
I have not installed I actually have installed the beta. I thought you meant the actual like Mountain Lion developer.
People in chat are saying it's just called messages.
It's just called messages. So to quote our friend John,
so iMessage is the protocol or the service.
Yeah.
And messages is the app. That's good.
Apps have been renamed for cross OS. This is John Gruber. Cross OS consistency. iChat is now messages. iCal is now calendar. Address book is now contacts. Missing apps have been added. Reminders and notes look like Mac versions of their iOS counterparts. Now that these apps exist for the Mac, to-dos have been removed from calendar and notes have been removed from mail, leaving calendar to simply handle calendaring and mail to handle email.
Yeah, that's awesome, by the way, that they added notes and reminders apps and finally broke them out of mail and iCal. It's one of those things. I'm amazed they didn't do this for Line. I don't know why they didn't. Maybe they just ran out of time. I don't know. But when, you know, as soon as on iOS, iOS has had notes since version 1, and notes have never synced in a useful way to the Mac, ever.
It's a big complaint.
You know, the way it's been done so far before this announcement today is that they would sync as mail items, and mail and various mail services would deal with them in various degrees of dysfunction. None of them were good, and it's always been so bad that I've always just said don't sync notes, because they just show up in mail in weird ways and they behave weirdly, and notes aren't mail, and if they're in mail, I'll lose them, and like there's all sorts of problems with having them be mushed together.
Yeah,
and reminders in iCal have been similarly clunky. In iCal itself, they've always been a little bit weird. In BusyCal, they're even worse. It's just weird how these things have been mushed together, as John Gruber said, because those were the syncing protocols that they would use. Like, notes were synced really as IMAP items, and CalDAV was used for reminders. It is so good. I'm so happy they're finally fixing that.
And yeah,
it took them... I mean, reminders, okay, iOS 5 has only been out for a few months. That's a little bit understandable. But notes, what what took them so long to do that for notes?
Well, that and that goes back to what you were saying on Kinda Critical, the episode we did last week, where you were saying you're worried that they're not paying enough attention. That's what gives us the impression. That's exactly the kind of thing that gives those of us who pay attention to this kind of stuff the concern that, well, maybe they don't care anymore because of things like that. Like, it for a long time they didn't do it. They didn't address. Now they're addressing it. So there's something. Maybe that's why. But exactly. I don't know. You feel like you, and this seems to be Apple's pattern, especially when it comes to Mac OS X or OS X over the last, you know, couple releases. Really, is you just get the impression that they're racing to come out with something new. They're racing to come out with new features and add new things. And they're doing that at the expense of the old school of incremental improvements, of saying this release is, you know, it's not so much 1,000 new features or 100 new features or whatever. It's, we're just consistently improving everything. Everything is incrementally better. And that's really, that was the history for the old, you know, system releases, system 6, system 7, system, well, maybe not 8 and 9, but that was the theory. And then once they started coming out with the big cats, you know, with 10 and 10.1 and 10.2, up until the time when, and really, if you think about it, there were people, a lot of people who complained about Leopard, but then they came out with Snow Leopard. Again, it was these incremental improvements. And yeah, sometimes there would be a whole bunch of new features and then there'd quickly be updates to make everything work really great. But I still keep going back to Snow Leopard and saying, for me, that was the last big release that came out where it really, everything got better. Everything that was broken seemed to be fixed. Everything that was slow got fast. And then everything was just stable and it stayed stable. And that's it. And there's one thing I want to point out to people who have asked me, well, why don't you, you know, go back to Snow Leopard for the, and this is kind of a rule at Apple that I found out once a hard and painful way, is that if you buy a machine, whatever the current operating system is at the time that you buy the machine, it's likely you will not be able to install an older operating system. Like, you won't even be able to.
There's no drivers for the hardware in those machines in the older OS releases.
And they don't, it's very, because here's something that happened. This is a kind of a boring story. I'll make it very quick. I had bought a new Mac Pro and there were problems with the drivers for some of the audio gear that I was using and compatibility with, I think it was Pro Tools at the time. And it was frustrating. Couldn't make it work. I said, you know what? This used to work in the old version. That's where I have the drivers. I'll just drop back to the older version. It's a brand new Mac. Who cares? Nothing on it. Reformat, install. No, it couldn't install at all on it. And everybody that I talked to is like,
yeah, no, that's the way it's always been.
Well, I didn't know that. So that's something people should know about. I would love to be able to put Snow Leopard on some of these machines. And yeah, I'd be willing to lose some of this functionality to get the stability back. I'm not saying I would want it on my MacBook Air, but certainly on some of the other machines that I have here that I would just prefer. And there's a handful of machines that I haven't updated and have no plans to update to Lion. They'll just stay on Snow Leopard for a long time. And that's kind of the unfortunate thing. Apple always had this great history, especially with the big cat releases, of every time it was better, it was more stable, it had more features, but it was also more reliable. So hopefully, maybe Mountain Lion gives us that. Maybe Mountain Lion is the release to Lion that fixes all of these things and brings new features at the same time. Maybe we get the best of both worlds.
Well, do you think they'll just call it 10.7.5? Or has, I guess it's probably already been established as,
I think it's
10.
I think it's, I thought it was 10.8. Thought yeah. It was in there. Yeah, I think it is. Okay, let's do our first sponsor.
Yeah.
Squarespace. Squarespace.com. Now, this is the thing. For years and years, I built content management systems, electronic publishing systems. Before I did all this stuff that I do now, and before I got to wear a CTO badge, which didn't really change any of what I was doing.
Wait,
it just felt
cool.
You get
badges for that?
You do. You get, it's like a, well, it's not like a police badge. Because it's plastic, it's not metal.
Oh, okay. Like, is it like the fake TSA agent badges where they look like police officers?
It's not even. Yeah. It's not even that good. Mine fell apart after the first week. So before I did all that, I used to, people would hire me and I would write electronic publishing tools. I'd write them in PHP. I'd write them in sometimes in Java. And eventually I wrote them in Rails. And then I stopped doing all that stuff and I started talking about it. But long story short, I would be out of a job now. I would be unable to, well, I guess my job would basically just be as a Squarespace salesperson, because now if this software had come out back then, I don't know what I would have done. I would have panicked.
I mean, let's be honest. Those jobs sucked.
They did suck. So
it was so frustrating to have to like...
Horrible.
Here, let's customize a CMS for somebody again.
Exactly.
And everyone's requirements are a little bit different. And it's never... No one ever loves their CMS.
That's right. There's always a problem. And I deal with this now because the 5x5 is a custom thing that I wrote. And all I seem to do, my so-called spare time is just, I got to add a feature to do this. I got to add a feature. So I need to what I need to do is I need to hire a Rails developer to take over for me, because this is going nuts. And why didn't I use Squarespace for this? I'll tell you what. Maybe if Squarespace had been what they have now in their new version, I might have gone to that in the beginning. But I am moving everything else over to Squarespace. All my other older sites, everything, because it's great. And there's one feature they just released. This is a big thing. They said, talk about this. So I'll tell you about this one in particular. This basically, it's an amazing publishing platform in general. But this new feature they have is Slideshow 2. And it's amazing. Whenever you go out there and you think, man, I want to do cool things with a slideshow. Oh, how am I going to know? I got to download this thing. I got to learn jQuery. I got to pay some Flash developer. I don't want Flash. They've made it that all just go away. They have the most amazing slideshow feature. Tons of advanced features. You can link to individual slides. You make it work exactly the way that you want it to work. You set the fonts, colors, sizes, the entire screen treatment. You get these amazing, elegant slideshows. You know, yes, you can have different images linked to different things. Yes, you can create different gallery settings for everything. It's just so cool. And it's one of the things that's just built in to Squarespace. That's all you need to know. You get that among tons and tons of other features when you go there. So here's what you do. You go to squarespace.com and there is a special code that will give you, I want to make sure I tell you the right thing. Because they change it. They do all kinds of different like deals. So I want to make sure that that I tell the right thing. The promo code that you're supposed to use is Dan sent me two, the number two. Dan sent me two.
Where does Dan send me to?
15% off for 6 months. And that's what you get. 15% off, whatever plan you do, for 6 months. So go check it out, squarespace.com.
I think one of the reasons why I like that they're dropping the iCal name is because if you look like over in the Windows world, I know, just bear with me for a second. Microsoft beats people over the head with the Windows and Office brands, like really excessively. And this seemed to start with the 2003 Office release and with Windows Vista, I think. And I'm sorry, this is way after I stopped using Windows, so this could all be wrong.
I can't even imagine you as a Windows user at all, Mark. I can't even imagine it. You as a Windows user.
I built my own systems. I was a nerd. I was a hobbyist, you know, and I liked customizing all the crap and getting the big heavy quiet heat sinks from the specialty German companies,
right?
All that stuff. Because I wanted to make my computer as quiet as possible, but yeah, I had the big aluminum cases. It was great. Anyway. And most of the time it worked sometimes. But Microsoft beats people over the head so badly with this branding. And everything is like one of the worst named applications in all of Windows. The Windows Picture and Fax Viewer. Is it Photo and Fax Viewer? Like, okay, on the Mac it's called Preview. On Windows it's called Windows. And it actually says in the title bar, Windows. Windows Picture and Fax Viewer. First of all, that name came out with Windows XP, I believe, in 2001. Even in 2001, nobody was using faxes anymore. Like, it was pretty unusual to have to send a fax for most people who would see that application. And so it instantly not only confused people as to what exactly this thing was, but it seemed archaic. Like, Windows Picture and Fax Viewer. It's like if you got one of those like integrated systems that like had like in the late 90s or the mid 90s, one of those integrated stereo systems that it had separate speakers, but in the middle of it had like a fake stack. I have one of these, like a fake stack of components. It was all one big box, but it looked like a receiver, an amp,
yeah,
a cassette deck, and a CD player, and maybe a graphical equalizer if you had a really fancy one. Was it called a graphical equalizer? That doesn't make sense. Anyway, an equalizer. And, you know, that it would be like calling one of those things, like, this is a deluxe cassette deck that happens to also play CDs. And it's, no, that's not why anybody bought it. No one bought it for the tapes, you know. But anyway, Windows Photo and Fax View. I don't know. That was a terrible tangent. Sorry. they really... Oh, apparently, Williams has corrected me. Now, in Windows 7, which came out, 2 years ago? So, like, 2010 or so? They called it Windows Photo Viewer. So, that's better.
it's something.
It's better, but it's still, you know, it still has Windows in the title. And when you installed Office, I think 2003 is when they started doing this, the shortcuts, the icons, would all say Microsoft. Instead of saying Microsoft Word, it would say Microsoft Office Word, Microsoft Office Outlook, Microsoft Office Excel.
Right.
It, like, they kept shoving these branding words into the titles of everything. And even with Windows Phone 7, I think one of the reasons Windows Phone 7 has not caught on at all with consumers is the name is terrible. It's confusing. It's Microsoft seems to think that Windows is a strong brand. It isn't at all. It is within Microsoft because they're in a little world there. Talk about a reality distortion field. They're in their own little bubble up there in Seattle or wherever they are, Redmond, and close enough. You know, they're in their own little bubble. They think people know what Windows is. They don't. If you ask somebody who is using a Windows PC what kind of computer they have, they will say a Dell. They won't say this is a Windows PC, however you pronounce the registered trademark R, inside of a Dell case. Like, they're not going to describe it that way. They don't say, oh, I use Windows. I have a computer. It's a Dell. Like, regular people don't associate with the Windows brand. And to call Windows Phone that was weird, too, because it didn't run Windows. It didn't look like Windows. And the UI doesn't even contain Windows. So, like, that was weird. But they called it that because they wanted to have this branding association. But nobody thinks of it that way. Only Microsoft people have that association.
Yeah. No, and that's a really, really smart point that you're making. And I think you're absolutely right. It's something that even the more savvy technical Windows users that I know don't necessarily think of that as, like, a strong selling point to them. You know, if you were to get a surround sound system, you would look for the THX logo, because to you, there's a positive association with THX. And in fact, there are many people who are listening saying, I wouldn't even buy surround sound if it wasn't THX certified. I don't even know what THX certified means, but I need it. You know, that's kind of the mentality around it. And I think Microsoft's perception, as you've pointed out, is that putting Windows on something that they make, or putting the word Office there or whatever, is the equivalent to them, not to anybody else, but to them, of a hi-fi system or whatever the kids call it today, having the THX certification logo on it. You know, it doesn't mean really anything to anybody, and it just causes confusion for a lot of other people, because I don't think there's anybody around right now, even the most hardcore Microsoft fans, who are going to sit back and say, I really want Windows on my phone. They don't. They want whatever that other thing is, the Metro or whatever it's called. That's what they think of when they think of Microsoft, but that's not what it's called. It's called Windows. And you're right. People are going to hear that. I don't want Windows on my phone. Like, I hate Windows at work. Why would I use it on my phone?
But, and they don't even think about that, though. Like, they don't think, oh, like, it's like when Windows says on all of its screens, like, starting Windows, resuming Windows, shutting down Windows, logging out of Windows. No one cares. No one sees that. No one thinks about that. Like, Microsoft has been trying to convince people forever that Windows is a thing that they should care about. But people just see the box that it's in. They see the computer. And in the mess of all the stickers that they put on PCs, is it an Intel computer? Is it a Centrino computer? Is it a, that dates me a little bit. Is it an NVIDIA computer? Because it has one of those stickers on it? Like, right. And all these, and is this a Windows ready computer? Like all this weird stuff. And then right in the middle of all that is a giant plastic thing that says HP. And, you know, so people know they bought this computer at Best Buy or whatever, and it's an HP. And when people talk about computers, they say, is Dell good? Is that a good computer? Is HP a good computer? They don't say, is Windows a good operating system for my personal computer? Like, it's just the way people think about all this stuff. It shoving in all that branding doesn't really resonate with people.
No, and you know what? Not only that, look at what Apple's doing. They're dropping the word Mac from their operating system.
Yeah. So now, you know, when people say, I have a Mac, or more commonly, I have an Apple. Oh well, you know, you live with it.
Right.
You know, when they say that, they're not saying, I have a Mac OS X PC. And at least they're not saying OS X. But, you know, they don't think about who makes their operating system. They think about the entire product, the whole package. And so I think with Apple dropping these brands, even dropping the I everything from a lot of this stuff.
Amen to that. Good riddance to that, by the way.
I don't need my calendar to be called iCal. It's just the calendar. Mail has always been called Mail. It's not called iMail. As far as I know, it never has been. So it makes these things easier. It makes them simpler. It makes it easier to say, for a new user to say, oh, how do I make a calendar on this new computer I just got that I don't know how to use? Oh, look, calendar, done. You know, very, very simple. Notes, reminders, simple words, not an overload of branding. You know, it's a way of reducing clutter, both visually and conceptually. You know, and so I'm happy to see them doing this, and I think, of course, like, as I said earlier, it makes a lot more sense to do things like take notes out of Mail and take reminders out of iCal. Like, that's great. And I by the way, I hate iCal, it for so many reasons. I every time iCal gets updated, I'm disappointed by how terrible it is, because iCal, I think if I have to pick, and I've blogged about this before, if you have to pick, like, what's the worst built-in app on OS X. And every time I pick iCal, not because it works the worst, because it doesn't work that badly. What I don't like about iCal is that it's such an important app to me and to a lot of other people. And it could be so good with such minor changes that they just refuse to make. And it has a bunch of small and a few big annoyances, and they just don't seem to care. But other than that, like, despite all that, I might drop BusyCal, because now I'm going to have a separate app for reminders, and I'll have a separate app for calendar, and I know they'll always work with iCloud, which BusyCal occasionally, you know, if iCloud changed something, like when reminders came out first, BusyCal kind of worked crappily with it, because you'd have to select the right thing. I don't know. It was a mess. Like, I love using less software whenever I can. You do too, right? You use everything stock.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so, like, less software is usually good for computing happiness. And so, you know, anything that allows me to eliminate software, that's good. I would love to, even though I bought BusyCal and it's not a bad program, I would love to not need it anymore and to just be able to get rid of it. Meanwhile, of course, I say this as a developer of something that replaces a built-in Apple feature. But, you know, oops. I guess that's it. What else? I mean, I'm sure we're going to have a lot more to say about Mountain Lion as we actually get a chance to use it. I haven't even used it yet, but we're going to get a lot of people asking. I've already had a lot of people asking me, should I install this on my main computer?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to that is almost always no. And I'm not planning on installing it on my main computer for a long time. I'm still not even using iOS 5.1 on my devices yet. But
so, of course, the question, why? Why not? I mean, not necessarily, you know, our audience, early adopters, probably, you know, that a lot of them have a developer account with Apple, and they could go and download this thing. And do we know, is the distribution of this going to be through the Mac App Store from now on? That's just the way it is.
The Lion was done that way. I can't imagine they'd go back on it.
So why shouldn't they install it? Now, let me read what John Gruber says in his article about it. Here's what he says. I've been using Mountain Lion for a week, pre-installed on a MacBook Air loaned to me by Apple. I have little to report. It's good, and I look forward to installing the developer preview on my own personal Air. It's a preview, incomplete and with bugs, but it feels at least as solid as Lion did a year ago in its developer previews.
Well, that's not saying a whole lot. I've heard from some of the other reports from people who have had the preview access that it's buggy. I don't know. I wouldn't install it on my only computer, that's for sure.
If
I had multiple computers, I wouldn't install it on the one that was most important. Like when Lion came out, I still had the Mac Pro and the MacBook Air. I had two separate computers. I put it on the Air because that was my like occasional portable computer. It wasn't my main computer that I got most of my work done on. So if you have two Macs and you can spare one of them to be a little bit unreliable, maybe, then go ahead and install it on that if you want to play with it. But I wouldn't put it on your main one yet.
As a developer, do you think if you're planning on developing something that's going to be feature complete and ready to run and have, you know, be something that takes advantage of the features that obviously are going to be a part of Mountain Lion, and you feel like, man, I need to get on, I need to get it ready for this, then you kind of have to. But not right. as your main development machine, right?
But I think just as iOS developers generally need to have more than one device just for testing purposes, I think Mac developers usually need to have at least one additional Mac that they can install a different version of the OS on for testing. Because generally speaking, like even now, even though Lion's been out for like, what, 4 or 5 months now, even now you still really can't launch a Lion-only Mac app and expect to not receive a bunch of complaints from Snow Leopard users saying this doesn't work on my computer. You generally have to maintain one version back, at least, like one major version back. And so if you're a serious Mac developer, you probably already need multiple computers just to have those two different versions installed. And maybe you also need a third one. Like maybe you have like the one running the oldest OS you support.
Yeah.
Your current one, like your main development machine that probably runs the current stable release of the OS. And then maybe you have another machine for betas like this for the next version. And you can do things like double and triple booting. I don't know how those work with Lion. Like I know you can dual boot sometimes with an older version with some of the older ones. I don't know how that works in modern day OS X.
We have kind of along that tangent, we have people in the chat room who have pointed us at a twit pick from Dave Hamilton, who says, so my Mountain Lion attempts with VMware Fusion 4.1.0 have been unsuccessful. And he's got a picture of a kernel panic of Mountain Lion running in or not running under VMware. So don't bother with it yet.
My favorite part of kernel panics is how the screen slowly dims from top to bottom.
I hate that.
It's like a gradual...
I hate everything
like,
about it.
You can just see it. No! You know exactly any Mac user who's ever had a kernel panic happen. You know, the first time you're like, what the heck? The second time you know exactly what it is. Right. And you're like, oh no, I was doing stuff. all my windows are going to have to be restored that might not work properly in Lion. All my unsaved documents, all this stuff, all the state that I was maintaining.
Now, XLC in the chat room says, dual boot, just use another partition and boot with the option key pressed. So I have had mixed results dual booting multiple versions of Mac OS X for a variety of reasons. Dual booting, for those who, if there are people who don't know, I mean, maybe there are people who don't know, it's just what it sounds like. You can install multiple operating systems on a single hard drive or on multiple hard drives. And when you hold down the option key at boot time, the Apple computer will present you with a few different images of hard drives, whatever's connected to that machine or installed in that machine that is that it sees as bootable. And you, it's even graphical. You can move the mouse, you can click on different hard drives. And of course, this is the same way that if you have a problem with your current installed version of Lion, you would hold down Option and there'll be a little recovery drive there. And you click that and it launches and it lets you reinstall the operating system if you want, or reformat the drive, all kinds of things you can do. And it works very well. It'll even download the latest version of Lion, the media from the internet if you have an internet connection. So it's great. But I've run into trouble running multiple versions, especially multiple versions of Mac OS X this way. I don't know if you've ever tried this, Marco.
You just reminded me. I actually did do that when the Lion preview first came out. The second preview major update, I installed it right over top.
Yeah.
But the first one, I was too scared to do that, so I installed it on a USB drive on the MacBook Air, and that was horrible because USB drives are really, really slow. So that was not a good experience, but it did work. It did allow me to look at the OS and test it a little bit, but it was unbearably slow for any real activity.
The problem is that
the SSD that's inside the MacBook Air.
Yeah, I mean, you can do things to intentionally prevent the operating system from finding like applications and stuff, but the way I remember this working the last time that I tried this is that the one install of OS X found all of the apps from the other install of OS X and created inconsistencies and problems, more so going backwards and going forwards. In other words, your old version of Mac OS X might find the new apps and might give you problems with associations and things. Maybe they've gotten past that. Maybe things are smarter now. It's been a while since I tried.
Sounds terrible.
But it... if anyone in the chat room is saying, oh, Dan, don't worry about that, I'm still not going to do it. But you can eat. Did you know that you can here's this kind of dangerous information. Did you know you can resize partitions on your hard drive with Disk Utility?
I did know that. And I've done it like twice, but each time I do it, I make sure I don't need anything on any part of that drive.
Right.
Because I still remember from back in the Windows days, the only time I've ever lost data that I know of was one time back in my Windows days when I was attempting a partition resize with one of the various tools that did that.
Yeah.
And it just killed the entire drive. It made everything unreadable. And I don't know if those were ever reliable.
But it's scary.
If you realize that's how Bootcamp
does. Yeah, that's what Bootcamp does.
The Bootcamp installer resizes down your Mac partition to create the Windows partition. And like this, it's weird. Like certain things, like the swap file can't be moved while it's running. Yeah. So like certain things you can't do. And sometimes it would just fail with mysterious error messages. I don't know. Honestly, I would love to see Time Machine improved in its reliability. That's a whole separate issue. But maybe in Mountain Kitten or whatever, it'll be improved. I don't know.
One of the things that this made me so happy when I saw this, not because, oh, we've got a new version, not because there's a beta of messages available, which we should talk about if you've tried it, but because this completely disproves everything that John Siracusa was saying when he was saying, this is Lion, this is King of the Jungle, this is the last big cat release. He was so confident about it. And here we have Mountain Lion. So he's wrong. He was wrong. And I can't wait to talk to him about that and hear if he'll even still be a Mac user after this.
And as somebody, I'm sorry, I forgot who, somebody in the chat room pointed out earlier, now he's going to have to write like one tremendous review every year.
Every year he's going to do this. It takes him more than a year to write it.
I know.
He's already late. He's got the developer release. Yeah, now he's going to have his wife's computer. Did you know that? He takes his wife's computer. His wife's not going to have a computer ever anymore.
This is going to be great. Everyone else this morning, when they woke up to this news,
everyone else
was like, wow, this is great. Sean Siracusa was probably like, oh, no.
Right.
After write another tremendous review so soon.
He'll never get a break. This means he will literally never get a break from writing. Anytime from now on that you talk to him, he will always be writing a review.
There's three people who really were disappointed by this announcement. The guy who develops Growl.
Right.
John Siracusa and John Siracusa's wife.
That's it. That's it. All right, let me do our second sponsor. It's Rackspace.com, Rackspace Hosting. These guys do several different kinds of hosting. Most of the time, a hosting company, they do one thing. And the buzzword these days, it's all about cloud or virtual, you know, VPS. They do that, and they do that very well. In fact, they acquired SliceHost, and that became a big part of their cloud offering, what SliceHost did so well. But they do more than just that. They have physical server hosting, which, believe it or not, there's a lot of reasons why you might still want to do that. You might want to have a complete server down to the metal under your control. They offer that. They also do cloud hosting, of course. They do managed hosting. So if you don't want your own IT department and you don't understand what server hosting and configuration really means and you don't want to, they do that, and they do that with their fanatical support, which is really, they really are the world's leading people when it comes to support. But they offer that across the board. And a lot of the time you say, I want to do cloud hosting, I want a VPS. Well, you're on your own. You get like a root access to a Linux install and like, good luck. Hope you like it. Oh, we have recipes, but you need to be a sysadmin to understand what that means. No, they will support it. They'll do anything that you want. They'll configure the servers in any way that you need. It's managed cloud server hosting. And they also have tons of other stuff. Like they have, you know, CDN. So if you're like us and you want to get, you know, files distributed out to the closest point to your users, they can do that. They have managed security. They've got private clouds. They've got server co-location, and they'll manage your stuff. I mean, you name it, whatever it is, they will do it, and they offer it. And it's really great. I know these guys very well, met them in person, and they're just a really, really great, great bunch of people. I couldn't recommend them more highly. So check them out. You can go to Rackspace.com, and you can learn more about all of the services and things that they offer. And they call the people who work there Rackers. Isn't that cool? So go check them out.
Well, they can say that, but you can't say that.
I can't. Oh, that's the same rule there. Okay, but listen, everything you want, cloud hosting, managed hosting, hybrid hosting, go check it out, Rackspace.com. They came up with the hybrid hosting on their own. I can't take credit for it.
Well, you can. I mean, who's going to know?
Did you get a little construction done?
A little bit, yeah. This is why we normally schedule the show later in the day when the construction's over.
It's not that bad.
No. There's just somebody building radiator covers 15 feet away.
So
through only one wall.
the new version of Messages, well, I shouldn't say the new version, the first version of Messages, it's the Messages beta from Mountain Lion, is available right now. And I remember, I believe we probably talked about it a long time ago when Apple first came out with the new version of iOS that had the Messages app. And I think we were speculating, gosh, I wonder how long it will take before there is a Messages that runs on your Mac. Wouldn't it be great if just wherever you go, you have one portal for everything? I remember talking to you about this. You know, wouldn't it be cool to just,
definitely.
You sit down at your Mac and you're chatting with your wife, and it doesn't matter if your wife is on her phone, on the iPad, on her computer, you can have one conversation. You don't need to say, oh, well, she's not responding on IM, so I got to ask her where the spare diapers are. And so do I go, now I got to run over there, I got to get the phone, I got to message her on the phone. Well, she didn't answer there, okay, I get it. You know, it's just one thing now. You can find the diapers in one place because you know where to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and The problem with this, though, which a number of people have already pointed out, is going to be very familiar to anybody who has ever synchronized calendar alarms to multiple devices.
Yeah.
And that is, when you do this, if you synchronize your calendar to your phone and maybe also to your iPad, then every single time a calendar alarm is scheduled to go off, your iPad will beep, your phone will vibrate, and you'll get the message box on your computer.
Right.
And so you have this duplicate notification issue. And this is a very difficult problem to solve. This is going to be, I think, similar in its trickiness to the mute switch debate of like, what's the right thing to do here? Mm-hmm. Because when you really think about it, like every choice that you make on how to implement this kind of shared alert issue is tricky and has downsides.
Did I miss it? Did you mention email as well? Because like I'll get a notification.
You have alerts for email?
Yeah, when I set
those
a reminder, I'll get an email. My iPad will do it. My iPhone will do it. My computer itself will do it through iCal. That's what
that's
I get.
Interesting. So Casey Liss just told me in the chat, you get multiple notifications. However, they clear themselves off the lock screen on the phone once you read them on the Mac. That's interesting.
So there's a little bit of syncing going on. There's an awareness that...
It's synchronizing the, like, I acknowledge this notification. Yeah. But there's still that problem of the alerts. Like, if you're using iChat the way, like, with AIM, the way that we have used it to date, messages are pretty frequent. Like, you send, like, a lot of little quick messages to people because you're chatting. Text messages are kind of the halfway point between that. Like, email is, like, for most people... It's a little bit more like letters in that you or it's more like notes in school where like, you know, you write something for a few minutes and then you send this big thing and then you wait a half hour to an hour, or if you're emailing me a year, and then you get this big response. And, you know, text messages are a little bit less because you try not to waste SMSs. So you don't send like half a sentence and then finish it in a different communication. You know, people don't do that really on texts if they can help it. Because it wastes messages, it wastes notifications, it wastes battery life. But with AIM, with computer-based chat, that is how people use it. They send a large volume of messages with quick response times back and forth. And so if your phone is vibrating every single time the person you're talking to responds, that's not good. And you'll very quickly want to turn that off. So I think the solution here is... to have some kind of concept with the OS and with the notification system of which device you're currently using, like which one you should be receiving notifications on. So like if you're not using any of them and you get an inbound message, maybe then they should all vibrate. But if you like used your phone in the last minute and a half or 2 minutes or 5 minutes, maybe it should just go to that. You know, like, but even then you can see that has other issues as well. So there's all sorts of potential problems here. And I think a lot of them are actually going to revolve around a very mute switch-like topic, which is, you know, maybe you get them on all the devices, but only the one you're using sounds or vibrates an alert. So maybe the notifications exist, but they're quiet. Who knows? Like, this is going to be a tricky problem that so far Apple has not addressed that well, and we'll see how they do. Maybe it'll take until, you know, 10.9 before they do that. Who knows?
My only take on that is that if you acknowledge the message in one place, it should be, and as far as notifications anyway, if you acknowledge it in one place, it should automatically be acknowledged everywhere else that it can be acknowledged. So if you've got your iPhone and it alerts you and says you have a meeting and you acknowledge it there, it should be considered acknowledged and it should go away everywhere else that it is. But I don't mind it telling me on multiple devices. I would just, as long as when I tell it to stop, that it stops.
Right, and it sounds like that is how messages is implemented now.
Yeah.
But it still will cause the vibrate or the sound on all the devices on each time. And that's more of the problem, I think.
I don't actually mind that. It's kind of, you know, like when you hear a whole bunch of cuckoo clocks going off at the same time in a cuckoo clock store because it's new and you hear them all, you know, doing their thing. It's kind of cool.
That's great.
Makes you feel alive. I love that you need to get motivated sometimes to get out of bed in the morning. Pretty soon you'll have someone to motivate you.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Pretty well.
Good.
We had our first someone to motivate us class last night.
And, really?
That was fun, yeah.
Are you traumatized?
I remember that class. Made us feel a little bit better about the whole thing.
Oh, good.
Like, you know, it's like a what to expect kind of thing. Not the book. That everyone said the book was terrible, so we didn't read that, but you know, just like an overview of what's gonna happen and what's normal, and it's kinda good to know. I was really surprised to know how much of it was like, well, we don't really know. This has no relevance to anything. And people like this, this factor has no correlation and this one doesn't really indicate anything. And you can't really depend on this to tell you anything.
Yeah.
So it basically was a whole list of things that we could mostly ignore,
mm-hmm.
which is actually very comforting. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
How far away, how much time you got left?
A little while, a couple of months.
Okay. And don't think about it too much.
Yeah.
My advice to you and any other expecting father, I'm not saying lie to your wife, but I'm just saying, you know, give the impression that you're like really well researched, but go in there with no expectations, because I think the more you know, the more, at least if you're like me, the more freaked out you get. Just go in there, support your wife. That's your only goal. Do everything you can to make your wife feel confident and comfortable, because it's her job. The reality of it is all you need to be is a support structure for her. Whatever she needs, that's what you need to know how to do. And if you go in there thinking like, I can't wait to see my baby. I mean, yeah, that's good. That's a natural way to feel about it. But your job is to basically just keep your wife feeling as confident and motivated and supported as possible, because she's going to do the work. And by the way, I'll tell you what. Are you guys going to do like a... no drugs, or does she have a plan, or is she still deciding?
There's a whole plan in place. Yeah.
My wife, both times, both kids, no drugs, no painkillers, nothing.
That's good. I really enjoyed it. And I talked to her about this. I really enjoyed, your story with Merlin, I believe, about getting a cavity filled with no Novocaine.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, the whole fear, you should link to that in the show notes, whatever, if you can figure out what episode that was. good luck with that. But, you should, the idea of fearing pain so much, and like the fear of the pain is often worse than the actual pain.
Oh yeah.
And then when you go in there unaltered by drugs, then like once the whole procedure is over, the pain just stops and it's over, and you have soreness, but you know that's
done.
Actually really interesting. I haven't gotten a cavity filled since then. But it kind of inspired me to maybe try that next time.
Do it.
Anyway, yeah, I know. I hate Novocaine so much. How it still has these annoying effects on me for like an hour afterwards.
Or more.
Yeah, that drives me crazy.
Well, I think there's a lot of people in the audience who are excited for you and your new family. So that was why I wanted to make this.
And my next cavity.
And your next cavity. People in the chat room are like, is this a show? I'm like, yes, I think it is the show. I think there's a lot of people who would like to know what's going on with Marco and his wife and their new kid.
It's not like we have a topic in the show or anything.
No. But that's it. That's all that's going on. So are you using messages?
Not yet. Well, I haven't rebooted yet, so I still have 1072. And it requires 1073, and apparently also causes its own reboot, according to some reports I'm getting. So,
yeah, so you will reboot twice when you install it.
Right. So, and I have so much stuff going on with all the windows I have open, stuff, and nothing resumes. That's bullshit. That you still lose a whole bunch of state when you reboot. So I'm delaying it as long as I can.
Yeah. Well, I have been using messages this morning, and it's interesting. There's a lot of, and maybe this is what the kids like today, maybe because they're so used to these TV commercials and everything else. But the thing, and tell me, once you try this, you'll know instantly, as soon as you try it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But the interface is very jumpy. Things are constantly sliding around and moving around and jumping. And like when you get a message from one person, the sidebar, the person in the sidebar jumps up above the other ones, and then it jumps over on the thing. And as new messages come in, they're very jumpy. If somebody starts typing something, the line where they're typing it, like if you're familiar with doing this on your phone and you're sending something to someone in iMessages, you can see when they start typing, and if they stop typing, the little bubble that was showing the dot, dot, dot in it goes away. This same thing happens in messages, but it has a jarring effect. So I had been using if you go in, and this works, I think this works for just the regular iChat, you know, the regular version of iChat as well. But if you go to the view menu Underneath messages, there's something that says, show us balloons, show us boxes, show us compact. I have always used boxes. And it's even more jumpy if you have boxes. So it's just, it's a very jumpy, weird little interface, but I like the functionality that it offers.
You think maybe we're getting animation fatigue? Like maybe they push that a little bit too far, like the Galaxy Note. You know, it's like pushing this thing a little bit too far.
Maybe. I think I just, there's a lot that's happening in that one app. And you're not, I'm not really used to apps moving around underneath the mouse when I'm going to click on something and now the one thing slid up and the other thing moved over here. It's just a little much going on the screen. A lot happening. You know, have you ever gone to a buddy list and you want to message somebody and you double click on them at the same exact moment that they're switching their status to away or something and you wind up double clicking on a different person? Imagine that times 50 inside of this.
Right. Sounds rough.
People are saying, you don't use Twitter then, Dan. And of course I use Twitter. And I never see that happen in any of the apps or website. My apps, I use Twitterific. Never does that. Neither does the Tweetbot. But if it did, I would have to run away from it. All right.
Is that
it? Anything else to add?
No, I think that's it. I think it'll be interesting maybe next week, I don't know, to talk about the share menu in Mountain Kitten. And how that relates to the Microsoft Contacts thing in Metro and what we might see in the future from that or what we might not see. But that's a whole separate thing.
All right. Well, have a good week.
Wikipedia? We talk about Wikipedia.
Yeah.
No.
Just start right now?
No, there's no way I'm doing
75
that.
Minutes in?
No. Have a good week.
You too.
All right.